the governor's billion-dollar plan to preserve roads and bridges. What's the motivation? The money race in the 2016 Senate battle is Todd Young pulling away. The legal fight over ballot selfies and Jeb Bush visits Indianapolis. That plus the fever fall one game short of a championship and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 16, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the governor proposed spending $1 billion in new money on roads and bridges. It's a sudden change in position for Mike Pence, who in August expressed a desire to address road needs in the 2017 General Assembly. He will now ask the 2016 legislature for more road money. The governor made his announcement in a maintenance garage surrounded by highway workers. His plan calls for spending enough money to preserve 220 bridges and 1,800 miles of roadway. It comes in the aftermath of union-sponsored attack ads that accuse him of ignoring the infrastructure to preserve the state budget surplus at the expense of lives lost in traffic accidents. In fact, the majority of the money will be produced by reducing the surplus from 14% to 11.5%. Here's the governor.
We can look to the money that we have in the bank. We can look to the credit rating that we have without having to look to the pocketbooks of Hoosiers and motorists across our state. Jim, I've directed our staff to reach out to local governments around the state of Indiana and also work with members of the General Assembly to identify ways that we can support local investments in infrastructure as well.
And that's the governor responding to criticism from opposition Democrats who say his plan has no money for local governments. Did the governor flip-flop on road funding? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, how do you explain this sudden change of heart by the governor?
Well, it's obvious. I mean, his numbers are in the 30s. We had that debacle with the bridge on Interstate 65. We have a rating of D for our infrastructure.
Well, a couple of things. There's no empirical evidence that his numbers are in the 30s, except in Marion County.
Oh, okay. All right. So maybe they're in the high 30s in the rest of the state.
The bridge in Tippecanoe County was being repaired.
Yeah, but look at what else is happening here. His own NDOT people say that to maintain the state's bridges and highways, which, by the way, is a fraction of what local government's responsible for, to maintain it, you need $1 billion a year, not $1 billion spread over 4 years. This is the way he governs. He goes from crisis to Band-Aid, whether it's RFRA or HIV or the BMV or anything else. He comes up with a little tiny solution and says, I've fixed the problem. He doesn't even know how to govern.
Well, whether that's the case or not, this is...
Well, it is the case.
But it's a pretty dramatic change in position here to go from, we got to have this big surplus, to we'll wait to 2017, to all of a sudden we got $1 billion.
There's not a change on highway funding at all. In fact, this continues the bold leadership he's had on highway funding. No, seriously. Look, since 2013... Oh, wait a minute. Okay, you can go ahead and be rude. I'll wait till you're done.
Well, you lied for
2 minutes about this.
I didn't lie at all, Michael.
You did.
Oh, no.
So since 2013,
you just don't like the facts.
Tell me
go ahead.
Done.
Go ahead.
Since 2013, they've had $1.25 billion worth of funding for highways and roads above the Department of Transportation's budget. Okay. Now he's adding $1 billion above the $3.2 billion that's already planned to be spent. That's $4.2 billion for over the next 5 years. On top of that, so we're talking about more spending for highways and roads. I talked to Luke Kinley about this today. It's more spending on highways and roads in the last 7 years than probably in any decade before that.
I don't, well,
yeah, yeah, but it's Interstate 69. And, it's not maintenance of existing highways.
And we're talking about 16,000 miles worth of maintenance of our resurfacing of highways and 4,900 bridges over the next 15 years.
All right, I don't think you, I don't think you can argue that there's significant money being spent here. I don't,
thank you.
I think that's right, but it also appears that he's trying to take a campaign issue off the table before we get to 2016.
Well, it's clear, Jim, that it was shaping up to be a campaign issue, if only because Democrats and their backers in the form of the union that you mentioned in your open.
That's actually the leader of that union is a Republican.
A Republican.
But,
well, it's
but
not like
the
they
fact
don't have
is,
a stake in that.
They're not laughing at him, but being rude.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah. This is a sore subject. I can tell.
Michael's defensive.
Few things have gotten
people as riled about it. That's
the difference. Go ahead, John.
You're just going to misrepresent it.
It was destined to be a campaign issue because Democrats were going to make it a campaign issue. In fact, we've heard Ann talking about crumbling infrastructure now for several weeks. I mean, the talking points, I think, have gone out. So this does, in some ways, maybe inoculate him against the charge that he has ignored the problem. But the problem is even more significant than the state-controlled and state-maintained roadways. That's a small piece of the overall infrastructure dilemma that the state faces, because a lot of it is locally maintained, and these initiatives and this program doesn't target that. But in fairness, we should point out that this is a national problem. Infrastructure is bad from coast to coast, and in fact, the American Society of Civil Engineers study, which Ann just mentioned, I think it's the most recent numbers I saw were 2013, and all the neighboring states for roadways got lower or worse grades than Indiana. So right. It's not as if Indiana, you get here and all of a sudden the bottom falls out of your car.
So does this take it off the table as an issue?
Governor hopes so, because that's exactly what he's doing here. He's absolutely responding to the criticism from the union, responding to the criticism from the Democrats, and responding to the reality that more money needs to be spent on infrastructure in Indiana, as has been pointed out. But we'll have to see, because this is a Band-Aid. Now, we can argue about the amount, because, and I'm not disagreeing with Mike at all here, but the longer-term need is vast. And this does not address the longer-term need. We need to get down to fundamentals, which includes long-term funding sources on the state side, which likely means an increase in the gas tax at the very least, and to address the problems as John's talking about on the local level, possibly ways to allow local governments to raise other taxes, whether it's an option income tax or possibly a special property tax levy, so that they can address the problems that they have. Because regardless of what's happening around the country, we're the crossroads of America, and if we want to have an economy that's working, you have to have good infrastructure.
All right. Still with this. The day before the governor's announcement, Indiana Democrats launched a Fix Our Roads campaign. The Democrats are asking Hoosiers to post photos on social media that show roads and bridges in need of repair. They are encouraging them to use the hashtag Fix Our Roads. It's a continuation of talking points the Democrats have been using for weeks. Mike McDaniel, will that campaign accomplish anything?
The Democrats have been treading the governor on transportation now for the better part of a couple months. And as that was pointed out in Legislative Insight, they do that every day without offering any proposal of their own of any serious nature whatsoever. And you got to keep in mind that not one Democrat voted for the $3.2 billion Major Moves program that built a lot of roads in the state, or have voted for the budgets. They don't vote for the budgets, which included this $1.25 billion on top of the regular funding that takes place. And so for them to be complaining about highway funding and road funding in this state is a little outrageous. And this particular program that they're talking about, where they're encouraging people to go shoot a picture or whatever, I hope nobody gets hurt trying to do that, because if they do, it'll be on their head.
Yeah, it's good. Your concern is that.
Sure. Democrats are not going to drop this.
No, of course not, because they're not addressing the problem. They're not addressing the long-term funding problem, and they're not addressing the terrible position they put local government in with the property tax freeze. So you've got all of those issues going on here, and we still have a D rating for our infrastructure. But the other thing that's ironic about this is Mike Pence was in leadership in Congress. They have majorities in the House and the Senate. They have super majorities here, okay? And to say that the Democrats need to fix the problem when they are in complete control is hypocritical at the best.
Well, how big an issue will infrastructure be in 2016?
You know, it's going to be right up there with possibly, you know, education will be a very big issue there. If RFRA is still alive, it will probably be an issue. But I think that those three, with transportation, will all vie for the majority of the attention in the election coming up.
Well, the one thing we didn't touch on here is spending down the surplus. That's from previous positions of Mike Pence. That's maybe as interesting as anything in all of this. But it's going down to 11.5%. That's acceptable, right?
Well, I guess it's acceptability is acceptance is in the eye of the beholder. There has been an ongoing debate, as you know, Jim, in every budget session about how much should be held in reserve. There are, I think, some prescribed best practices that John, certainly with the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, would probably have his finger right on that pulse.
Well, but 10 to 12 is the general.
And that was what I was guessing. I was going to let somebody else say, so I wouldn't be out on a limb.
Well done, John.
But I think it is safe to say that the 14% that the governor had insisted on before was probably surpassed almost any of the best practice measurements or benchmarks that I'm aware of.
Well, let's start with the fact that none of this would be possible if they hadn't been good stewards of the fiscal situation in Indiana. For anybody to be criticized about taking any of this down when the Democrats in particular have been talking about spending it now for the better part of 2 years is funny. I mean, it's just laughable.
But it is a significant change for the governor,
right? It's still 11.5%. We still have one of the best fiscal situations in the entire United States of America. For that, it's because they've been good stewards. This wouldn't be possible to have a program where you're not raising taxes and spend this much money on roads without that kind of leadership.
You know, Mike is right about that. But the governor insisted on that high number because he wanted to say he had a record.
Right.
So now he's doing what has been called upon him to do, and that is spend the money on imperative needs. And I think you might see some more when we're talking about the unemployment compensation fund being paid down early as well.
Well, they've agreed to do that. $250 million. They expect that money will come back from employers to cover that before the road money is spent.
Well, but you're still going to see that coming down.
You still have other essential needs that aren't being met, though. From DCS on down, we're still seeing essential needs aren't being met because we're putting money in the bank instead of providing the services necessary.
I think John's point's a good one, though. By demanding that there be an excessive reserve,
if you have
I'm not necessarily saying that, but I'm saying you, as somebody who is the chief executive in the state facing an election where he'll be seeking re-election, it's nice to be able to say, because we were so frugal, and we've already heard a flavor of this from Mike, that we can
time out.
You can.
Time now for viewer feedback.
You can.
Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will infrastructure still be a big issue in the race for governor? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only if another bridge fails before Election Day. Last week's question, will the General Assembly solve the civil rights debate in 2016? 20% said yes, 80% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Todd Young is leading the money race this week in the 2016 battle for GOP Senate nomination. Young has $2.2 million in the bank, and he has already spent some money on a TV ad aired during the last GOP presidential debate. Congressman Marlon Stutzman has half that total, $1.1 million, and he is in the process of replacing most of his campaign staff. Finally, former state GOP Chairman Eric Holcomb is trailing with just $300,000. Here is Young, followed by Holcomb.
And the vast majority of that support comes from people right here in Indiana, representative of why I'm running. I'm running to create better jobs.
I'm not discouraged at all. This election, it's not store-bought. You can't just go in and pull it off a shelf. You got to earn it.
We felt like, let's make sure that we see that the goal is the same and how we're going to get there. And there were some differences of opinion, and we decided to make the moves now rather than wait.
And that's Congressman Stutzman explaining the shakeup in his campaign staff. He's looking for a new campaign manager and other key staffers. John Ketzenberger, is Todd Young emerging as a favorite in this race?
Well, it's hard to argue with his fundraising ability in this. He has been incredibly capable in that regard. And he works very hard when it comes to running a campaign, but so does Eric Holcomb and so does Marlon Stutzman. I think it's too early to call him a front runner. We still haven't had the election for this year, so next year's got a ways to go. But I think that the difficulties that Marlon has had with staff, he's got plenty of time to deal with that. It's been that way with him before. I don't think this is going to be a problem when it gets down to the race. I think you're going to have an interesting race. And I think that Marlon is right in there with Holcomb and with Stutzman Young at this point.
Yeah.
So the answer is no, Jim.
But if you're Todd, if you're Todd Young, you got twice as much money as the nearest challenger. He's having problems, and the other guy's a ways back. You got to like where you sit.
Oh, sure. I mean, to John's point, I don't think it's over, but if you have the option of sitting on $2.2 million or $300,000 or $1.1 million, I think it's pretty clear where you'd rather come down at this point. And again, this is a race where certainly name ID, these are individuals, even though they are well-known within their parties and they, at least in their geographic areas, may not have the kind of name ID statewide that often can be garnered through paid media and through television advertising. So, and that's where the money comes in. Mm-hmm. So that's probably bodes well. But it's you're right. It's probably not over.
But the money people are speaking.
Oh, no question. Unfortunately, the voters today, the most they know about these campaigns is what they see on television and through paid advertising. So from that standpoint, clearly, when you're raising that kind of money, you've got an advantage. But to what I didn't see on here were the numbers for the Democrats, and their numbers were way lower than this. And so that bodes well for the Republican candidate come next fall that we've got such a huge fundraising lead going into next year.
Well, I think there's something to that. Both Barron Hill and John Dickerson had fundraising numbers that were closer to Eric Holcomb's than the other two.
Yeah, they got started later than that. And, of course, two of the other involved are incumbent congressmen. And I don't think that Young thinks that he's that safe because he's moving to the right. He voted to shut government down, which is something he's never done before. So he's obviously trying to incur a little bit of room on Marlon Stutzman's plate. So we'll see. And we'll see whether the voters are interested in that kind of governance that from the radical right of the Republican Party.
Well, I think one thing that has hurt the Democrats in this situation is the notion that, let's put it this way, if the Stutzman numbers had been flipped with Todd Young's, and rightly or wrongly, Stutzman is being portrayed as the Tea Party candidate.
What do you mean, and rightly or wrongly?
The second part of it is what I was saying, rightly or wrongly. And then Todd Young is seen as the establishment candidate, along with Eric Holcomb. So when you look at people with the money, and you're on the Democratic side, if Stutzman's out there and you think, oh, this could be a Joe Donnelly, Richard Murdoch situation where it could flip, right. Yes. Then the money might be more flowing
it
more readily.
But with
Todd Young, right. Who's more of an rightly or wrongly seen as an establishment candidate,
it depresses funding for the Democratic candidates.
If you want national Democrat money to come into Indiana, you need Marlon Stutzman to be at the front.
Or you need to vote to shut government down like Young did.
All right. Should you be able to take a selfie with your completed ballot on Election Day? State lawmakers say no. A new state law makes it a felony to take a ballot selfie. The Indiana ACLU went to federal court this week seeking an injunction against that law. Attorney Ken Falk says it's an unconstitutional violation of free expression. Federal Judge Sarah Evans Barker promises a ruling before Election Day. John Schwanes, is this a solution without a problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to be. And if you read, I wasn't in the courtroom, but if you read the transcripts of the questions that Judge Barker was asking, it suggests that she too felt that there was not a problem that needed to be solved. She was pressing for empirical data showing that voter fraud, which ostensibly is what this law is designed to prevent, she wanted evidence that that had occurred, and there really wasn't any. If you want to see how this turns out, the same thing, it's unfolded in the exact same manner. You substitute New Hampshire, where a federal judge just a couple months ago this summer threw out the New Hampshire law, which was, I think, virtually identical to Indiana's. So unless we have two federal judges who view things dramatically differently,
I think that happens.
But in this case, I'm guessing that they'll see
but
it the same.
The concern is someone will be coerced to vote a certain way, and they'll use the camera to take evidence of it.
I think that's an interesting set of logic, interesting set of facts to try to draw some kind of logical conclusion from. I think that it'll be interesting to see whether Judge Barker bucks the previous judge. I kind of doubt it.
I do, too. It is clearly a solution in search of a problem. You can walk out of that voting booth and tell anybody how you voted.
Sure, you shout it from the...
Right. And who's going around coercing people to go take selfies? It's just the typical overreaching by the General Assembly.
Where did this come from?
Well, first of all, the law that you cannot reveal a ballot has been on the books since 1945. It's been a felony since 1945.
Has it ever been used?
Yeah, no, I don't know if it's been used or not. It's been on the books
widespread
since 45.
Voter fraud.
And what they did was, in their minds, upgrade this so that the modern digital devices could not be used. The same language is on the books in Colorado and California, which aren't exactly what I would call conservative bastions in the United States. So this law has been around forever. And they didn't change. It's now not a felony for the first time. It's been that way all along. So if she rules this will change that forever. But it's been on the books this long. So don't act like it's been something that's been done in the last session of the legislature, because it wasn't.
There's a difference between revealing someone's vote, having somebody at the voting place reveal someone's vote, which I agree should be illegal. But self-revealing your own vote is a completely
somebody
different
story. Somebody can take it. Shut somebody out in the hallway. Anybody can
have
it.
The answer here
you
is,
publicized it on your own.
Snapchat. I think if my teenagers are right in informing me, that's the one where it disappears after a few seconds. The evidence is gone. So Snapchat for all you stop laws.
Right.
That's the way to go here.
Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush stopped in Indianapolis this week, but you likely didn't hear about it. This you're about to see is a picture of State Senator Jim Merritt introducing Bush at a roundtable discussion. There was no news release or pre-publicity surrounding his visit. Bush also attended a private fundraiser hosted by Al Hubbard, a former White House aide to George W. Bush. Mike McDaniel, why no time for the media?
I have no idea. I mean, I thought this was, I don't understand why they did this. This was when Hillary Clinton came down and raised money. She did the same thing.
Same thing.
I don't understand it. If you're going to take the time to go someplace, you ought to at least try to communicate. They raised a lot of money. They did talk to a roundtable group, so they did do a couple things where they talked to some leaders, and I applaud them for that. But I just don't understand the logic of these presidential candidates coming to the state and not taking advantage of talking to somebody in the media. I just don't get it.
Hillary did the same thing.
Hillary did the same thing. Obviously Bush is raising money, but he's not setting the world on fire anymore with this. And what is he in? Sixth place is what I'm hearing now in the polls.
He's reduced some salaries.
Well, I think
maybe is he figuring he won't get to Indiana next
May? He might not still be alive by next May.
It does eliminate all pretense of what they're here for, and that's raise money, unfortunately.
Finally, the Indiana Fever lost a bid this week to win the team's second WNBA title. The Fever lost Game 5 to the Lynx on the road in Minnesota. The final score was 69-52. The Fever had been 5-0 in elimination games this postseason. The loss means Tamika Catchings has just one more chance to win a title. She will retire after next season.
It's been an amazing ride, and I'm so proud of them. I know it's disappointing that we made it this far, and we didn't get over that hurdle. But at the same time, when you put things in perspective and you look at just what we accomplished so much this season.
And Delaney, is that the right attitude?
No, it was great. I mean, they had a run nobody expected them to make, and she's coming back for next season, and I have great hopes they're going to win next time around. They were certainly a credit to the city all the way through the season. And Stephanie White, deserves a lot of
rookie
credit.
Rookie coach.
Rookie coach taking it to the final game of the championship. That's terrific.
She certainly appeared to be an all-business coach on the sidelines and in the locker room from what we saw there. Fevers turned out to be a pretty good franchise.
They end up, after the way they started this year, for them to end up in the WNBA Finals was remarkable and nailed it. They were terrific. And Tamika Catchings is clearly the class act of professional sports in all of Indiana. I mean, she is the best, and I agree. I'm glad she's coming back.
Well, and Brianna January, too, certainly had a great season.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.